You're listening to Return Again on the Land of Israel Podcast Network. I'm Goel Jasper, and today's guest is Michael Weichbrod. Now, I know I've always interviewed people who have been in Israel long enough to have perspective, but Michael's perspective is so clear, so direct, and so focused on Torah that he brings with him many, many centuries of perspective on living in Israel, even though he's only been here for a few years. I met with him recently in his Ramat Beit Shemesh home, and we talked about his story, as well as the larger issue of Aliyah among the Haredi community in the U.S. Here's Michael Weichbrod, returning again. Michael Weichbrod, thank you very much for allowing me to come into your home to hear your story, and not only your story of Aliyah, but you have a mission.
Absolutely.
Related to the Haredi world outside of Israel and what might be possible with them. So we'll get to that a little later, but we're going to start with you. When's the first time you ever heard of the concept of making Aliyah?
Well, like any Jew, I've heard of the concept many times, but like so many people in America, it was never an option for me. The first time I ever came to Eretz Yisrael was after I got married. I never went to Eretz Yisrael, I never came to Eretz Yisrael with my family. My parents never came to Eretz Yisrael either.
Me too. First time I was already married.
Exactly.
Actually, already married with a son. The first time I ever came. Okay.
Me too.
Yeah.
I believe, yeah, it was... Yeah, I think so. I think I had my first kid already. So I only came to Israel twice before I made my Aliyah. And the truth is, both times that I came, I was very... I wasn't coming with the idea that I might move here one day. There was Eretz Yisrael was a completely foreign concept. When I came here, I probably wanted to live here less after I came here, and just seeing the culture differences and the language differences.
For the listeners, if you hear some music in the background, there's an election going on today in Beit Shemesh, and cars are going around with loudspeakers recommending who people should vote for. I guess
Oh, they're telling me to vote for him. I'll go ahead and do that.
That's a whole other podcast. Like the Israeli philosophy on electioneering.
Yeah,
like all these tactics that definitely do not work.
This is my first election year that I'm here, so it's mind-boggling that they go down the street 9 o'clock at night, waking up my kids, and I'm like, I'm definitely not voting for that guy.
Okay, so anyway, so you weren't thinking Aliyah when you came
to Israel? Never, not even remotely. I came here twice. Both times was on Sukkot. My memory's not great, so I don't know exactly which years into my marriage I came, but it was maybe a year or two into my marriage, and then again a year or two after that. We came as tourists to my wife and I. It was both of our first time to Eretz Yisrael. And like I said, it was very foreign, and I definitely was not thinking about Aliyah at any of those points.
Right. So let's go back even further. You're a kid in Brooklyn. Did you ever hear of anyone from your neighborhood picking up and moving to Israel?
No.
Was it a thing at all?
No, not at all. None of my family ever moved. My uncle made Aliyah right before me, but we were the first two of my family, and so far the only two members of our family, including my wife's side, that made Aliyah. So definitely not in my family, definitely not in my wife's family. And I grew up in Brooklyn, in the heart of it, Kensington. So definitely not that I can remember that I know anyone that made Aliyah. Completely foreign idea to me.
Right. So those two visits, Sukkot, it's just a beautiful place to be.
The best.
But no hesitation about going back to Brooklyn. So when did it start for you? When did you first say, hey, what's going on here?
For me, I would say as I progressed in my marriage, but as I got older, I felt I was a plumber. That's what I was doing in the States. And I would just say around me, I just saw the level of gashmias, the level of
materialism.
Materialism, exactly. Picking up more and more. And even as a plumber, I was installing $1,000 toilets. I'm not exaggerating. I mean, name brand toilets.
Right.
Totos. And I would tell my customers, why are you installing this? I can get you a toilet for $150. Does the exact same thing. And people want, same way people want a little alligator on their shirt. They wanted that Toto on their toilet. And things like that just boggled my mind. Because I grew up, Baruch Hashem, when I grew up, my parents never had too much money. And I did not grow up very materialistic. And that boggled my mind. And it just didn't seem like a godly way to live. It didn't seem like a, Torah-like way to live. And so before even I had any intentions at all to make Aliyah, it was definitely a big part of me that wanted to get away. Eretz Yisrael wasn't an option. In fact, no place was really an option. But I knew that I with each progressive year, I just felt more and more like I don't belong here. I didn't connect with the mindset, and that everyone was, how can I make more money? Everyone, next business, and I never connected it. I just wanted to serve Hashem. I want to live a simple life, comfortable, be able to pay my bills. So there was definitely a feeling stirring within me of wanting to get away somehow.
Now, for the listeners, you don't see what Michael looks like. You got a nice beard, but it's put together. Like you it's not going off in 17 different directions.
Yeah.
I have nothing against that approach either. But you're like put together. You're wearing, is it black velvet? Kippah? Black velvet kippah? Ish. Okay,
yeah, but close enough.
Not kippah sruga.
Right. Not yet.
And you grew up in the Haredi world.
Yeah, absolutely. Very mainstream.
Did you grow up in the Haredi world with access to media and those kinds of things, or without access? Because that's a huge distinction.
Yeah, definitely access.
Okay.
Definitely access.
So in a house where parents had smartphones, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, my parents were an interesting story on their own. Amazing people. I love them very much. They're fantastic. My house dynamics was a little interesting. My mother was always much more on the modern side. Mm-hmm. She's more of a Baal Tshuva, mm-hmm. Although she's an amazing woman and very spiritually connected. And my father was always much more yeshivish, I guess you would say.
Yeah.
Also, in a certain sense, Baal Tshuva sort of found his own way. But he took a much more strict religious mm-hmm. path. So I kind of grew up with two parents that were on different sides in a certain sense, but I myself grew up, had a computer, I had internet, I had mm-hmm. smartphones, and that was my... Yeah.
Right, so the reason I'm pointing that out is because it's not like you grew up in Brooklyn in this community where materialism was very important to people and you were seeing it firsthand through your work. You knew what was going on in the world. It wasn't your assumption that all from Jews act like this, correct? Or was it?
That
all from Jews are into money or into materialism.
No, it wasn't that all from Jews are materialistic, but I was actually living in Lakewood at this point. I grew up in Brooklyn, but then I moved to Lakewood after I got married. So most of what we're talking about was already in Lakewood.
Got it, okay.
But it for me, it was just more that It just didn't seem like Klal Yisrael, or at least the people around me, which I guess was mainstream Jews, although a lot of Torah, Kollel, and mitzvahs, and everything was taken seriously, but on the other hand, it was definitely the Western values was creeping in more and more and more. And then even I myself moved eventually to Tom's River, and I bought a house there. And even there, I just saw how each family that moved in needed to buy a bigger house than the last one.
Right.
It wasn't just keeping up with the Jones. It was, how can I surpass the Jones?
Wow.
And although these are all wonderful people, mm-hmm, wonderful Jews, all, keeping Torah mitzvahs. But again, it just seemed like there was way too much materialism mixed in with that. And it just didn't seem like the values that we should be having as a holy people, to be so stooped into that.
Right.
Steeped into that.
So what happened?
So like I said, for me, it was there was initially a very strong feeling of wanting to get away. And
your wife was in line with you on this?
Yeah, for the most part, I think my wife feeds off of my ideology a lot, and she's a great person. And she also had, she felt very similar to me on her own also, that we would talk about it a lot. We would talk about our days, and we would always just be mind-boggled how what we'd be seeing around us constantly, and it just didn't seem to fit with the way we wanted our future to be and the future for our children, to be a little more separated from the materialism and to be pursuing a more spiritual, holy purpose. And the interesting thing I would say is that I wouldn't say Aliyah for the most part ever came up. It was more Eretz Yisrael.
Okay.
It was for me the thing that opened the idea of moving to Eretz Yisrael was Tanakh. I've always loved to learn Tanakh. I've always loved to learn Chumash.
Right.
More than just being, you know, Marvis Hedger, just reading it quickly. When I read the Chumash weekly, I actually read it as a real Seder. I go through it word by word slowly. I contemplate what it's saying. And year after year, it just started the question of why is there so much emphasis on Eretz Yisrael in Tanakh continuously, in the Chumash, and then obviously throughout all of Nach.
Right.
You know, everything. As soon as Avram Avinu has his first encounter with Hashem, go to Eretz Yisrael. That's where you start. That's where the people are going to start. And Avram and Yitzchak and Yaakov and Moshe and Yeshua and David HaMelech and everything. It's just extreme emphasis again and again and again on Eretz Yisrael. And I started wondering why, you know, so many Jews, mainstream Jews in Lakewood and Brooklyn, they consider themselves, you know, Torah Jews, follow the Torah and mitzvos, and they do. But there was this one big mitzvah, which seemed to be much more than just a mitzvah. It's an intrinsic Jewish value, Eretz Yisrael, and it just didn't exist. And like we said, I've never even seen anyone make Aliyah in right. my circles.
Right.
You know, I grew up middle of Brooklyn, then I moved to the middle of Lakewood, and it was never even an option. I never saw anyone do it. And this question started brewing, and eventually somehow the concept of wanting to get away from that growing materialism, along with this question of Eretz Yisrael and why is it not a thing in mainstream yeshivish Haredi Judaism, at some point they mixed, and then it just hit me, and I woke up one day and I'm like, we need to go to Eretz Yisrael. That's the answer to both issues.
So this is really interesting to me, because what it sounds like is there was no experiential moment of seeing something or going somewhere or doing something. It was just in your mind, the logical conclusion to philosophical questions you were asking about the frum world, let's say.
Yeah, and just reading the Torah and just trying to read the Torah.
But you grew up with the Torah.
Right.
Like, what about all those other years? Mm-hmm. Like, what do you think happened that all of a sudden, was it just like chipping away at you? And then finally you're like, I realize this? Or, you know, we all know that the Chumash, the objective of the Chumash is getting the Jews to Israel. And then Navi and Ketuvim, it's all about life in Israel and how to live properly if you're gonna live in Israel, right? So you grew up with this. What changed, do you think?
No, I guess the problem is that although we read the Chumash, mainstream, you know, yeshivish charid, I still don't know the right word to describe them. You know, that mainstream, very from world. It seems to be less about taking values from the Torah, from the Gemara, and using your own head mm-hmm. and contemplating mm-hmm. what it's trying to tell you. What is Hashem trying to tell you? What is your purpose? What is your neshama? You know, where is it bringing you? It's more mainstream Judaism is more about, you know, what are we told to do? You know, can't do that because the Mishnah Berurah doesn't say so. Do that because the Mishnah Berurah says that. So, you know, Mishnah Berurah, Shulchan Aruch, there's a couple of, you know, accepted Sfarim, and obviously we have to follow them. But if they don't put emphasis on something, then it just doesn't exist.
Yeah.
But there's no thought process behind it. Like, maybe the person who wrote the Mishnah Berurah, the Chavetz Chaim, you know, maybe in his days, moving to Israel wasn't an option. So it wasn't something he wrote about.
Yeah.
You know, that's Even in the Shulchan Aruch, you'll have the Ramah, mm-hmm. right? He'll continuously say things like, it wasn't our custom, you know, in Europe, but you have to understand why it wasn't the custom, right. And then you can come out, maybe we should start doing that again nowadays. So there's this concept of like, you have to put certain, sometimes Sfarim and certain, you know, Gedolim into perspective when they lived. Not chashem to change what they said, but just understand they didn't talk about something because it wasn't an option. That's now right. Something's, you know, even lighting the menorah, where to light it. There's a lot of halachas. A lot of times they couldn't light it outside. It was brought inside the house because lighting it outside was a sakana. Because it was right. Danger from the guy.
So all of a sudden that became lechatchila.
Yeah, and that became lechatchila. Now it's like if you light outside, it's like, that's weird. Why would you do that? So it was the same thing. Like there's, right. You know, so many people refer to Sfarim and Gedolim. They didn't talk about Eretz Yisrael, but you got to, it's important to use your head. And, well, they didn't talk about it because there's nothing to talk about.
That's right.
Tell somebody, you know, 300 years ago, move to Eretz Yisrael. It's like, well, if I do that, I will die. I mean, that's the option, basically. I mean, your chances of survival of getting to Eretz Yisrael was maybe 50-50, and then surviving there for more than a year was right. Basically none. So it was just as I got older, I just started realizing it's important to use my head. And the more I used my head, and the more I started, you know, reading Chumash and Tanakh and saying, what is Hashem trying to tell me? You know, sometimes I would ask myself, what would Moses do? You know, there's a famous what would he do?
Some other guy.
The other guy. So I at some point in my life, I started taking that sentence, and I started trying to live by that. You know, what would David HaMelech, what would Moshe, take whichever great person that you connect with. For me, it's actually David HaMelech. I very strongly connect with him. And you know, what would he do? And these people generally didn't just follow the flow, you know?
That's right.
The Meraglim, are walking into the Yom Suf, you can see that the greatest people did not follow the flow. They're like, let me use my head for a second. What does Hashem actually want me to do? What is the message he's trying to tell me? So if you take a step back from all the Sfarim and what mainstream Jews are telling you to do, and you just say, let's open the Chumash. Let's see what Hashem wants me to do. Now, obviously, you can't make up your own decisions that are going to go against halacha, but this is not against halacha. I mean, Eretz Yisrael is halacha. We're supposed to be living here. That's pretty obvious. The more you look into it, the more obvious that becomes. But it's important to just take a step back and sometimes take something like just a basic Chumash or a Gemara and just read what's going on there and don't think so much about halacha. Just say, what are the messages, the values that these holy people are giving over to me? And if you do that with the Chumash, I mean, you'd have to be a lunatic not to come out with, well, I should clearly be living in Eretz Yisrael, like just for starters, yeah. You know? So okay. That was the whole thought process.
So we'll come back to that side of things, but I want to go to that day. So in essence, you wake up and you have this moment where you're like, this is the answer. So what happened from there? You got to tell your wife.
Yeah.
So, do you remember that?
Yeah, partially, vaguely.
Okay.
I was very blessed because. Well, I will say also one thing. The thing that actually put me over the top. I was thinking about it. I was contemplating it. It was probably about a period of a year or so when I finally realized it was the right thing to do to move to Israel. I was still battling immensely. Parnassa, how am I going to make it there financially?
Right.
How's my wife going to do, leaving family, leaving friends? We, you know, again, we just bought a house in Towns River 2 years prior to this thought. And it was very scary. I couldn't even, like so many people, like I didn't even know how to process the idea. Like I came to the conclusion I need to do it, but I had no idea. So I kept pushing it off. The tipping point was a family friend of my wife's family who, his name is JD. I'm sure he'll see this or hear this. And
shout out to JD.
Shout out to JD because I think he was the tipping point. And I remember where it was because again, you know, it was a crucial moment in my life. It was in my in-laws' house by the kitchen table, and he mentioned, and he lives in Israel now, Baruch Hashem. He mentioned that he started the Aliyah process, and I find that that's what it takes for a lot of people. You just need to know one person that did it. Most people that moved to Eretz Yisrael did it after they know someone that did it.
Interesting.
And he mentioned it. Now, he didn't move yet. He just mentioned that he started the process. And as soon as I heard those words, and I'm also a very competitive person by nature, as soon as I heard those words, I'm like, whoa, whoa. If you can do it, I can do it. And that was the final flipping you know, yeah. of the coin. And so luckily for me, I guess Hashem worked it out perfectly. My wife was pregnant at the time with our third child, and she probably wasn't thinking clearly. And I think if she was doing better, she may have said no.
Interesting.
But basically she yeah, again, she was, I don't remember how pregnant, a couple months pregnant, and it definitely affected her, you know, probably her thought process to some extent. And I remember she, when I brought it up to her, she was very overwhelmed. She didn't even know how to process it. And she said, let me sleep on it. Let me think about this. You know, to her credit, she did not say no. She said, let me process this and think about it. Shout out to my wife, Tova, who's an awesome, awesome person.
She close with her family? Particularly close with her family?
Yeah, pretty close. Pretty close, yeah.
I mean, that probably played into it, right? Like, the whole idea of the support system for a mom, you know, it's relevant.
Yeah, yeah. It definitely had a big effect. And it still has an effect, but Baruch Hashem, we have phones and FaceTime and all that stuff, which is very mm-hmm. helpful nowadays. Mm-hmm. So the next day, I believe it was the next day, she said, she's very close with her dad. So my wife says, I'll ask my father.
Okay.
And if he says it's a good idea, then I trust him. We'll move to Eretz Yisrael. So when she said that, I knew I was in good hands because me and my father-in-law are very close.
Oh, okay.
And he's a supporter of a lot of my beliefs. And so she asked him, he called me up and he says, son.
He calls you son?
Yeah, sometimes.
Like, it's like partially joking?
Yeah, like, yeah, he'll say like son, I have a question.
Okay, awesome.
And so he calls me up, he says, son, you know, Tova tells me you want to move to Eretz Yisrael. I said, correct. He's like, you got this? I'm like, yeah, I think this is what I want to do. I got this. Yeah. He's like, God bless you. That was basically the conversation.
Wow.
And he called my wife and he said, if Machol wants to, go for it. And then that's it. And then,
so what year was this?
Well, let's see if we can maybe you'll help me make the calculation.
So we're 2024 now. Was it before COVID?
We moved here about right in the middle of COVID, probably about close to a year into COVID.
Okay.
We landed here in Eretz Yisrael Chanukah.
Right.
3 years from this Chanukah, 3 years ago. And we started the Aliyah process 6 months before that. It took six months to process.
Probably 2020.
So.
Somewhere around there.
It's about
2020.
3 years, three and a half plus a little.
Yeah, so. Yeah. And then what about your parents? You had to tell them also.
I told my parents, and surprisingly, my parents were, I mean, it's the kind of people they are, very relaxed. They're not that fazed by things. They're not like, no, you can't go. They're very supportive of if this is what you want to do, if this is your passion in life. I thought I'd have more of an issue with my mother. I thought she'd feel very strongly, don't go.
Right.
But to her credit, also, she said, if this is what's going to make you happy, I support you. And my father is also, he's a very godly person. So although he might not be so into the idea of Eretz Yisrael, but he's very into the idea of whatever you need to do to become closer to Hashem is what you should do. So he said, if this is how you think you should serve Hashem best. So we had everyone's blessings.
Siblings on each side?
I mean, they didn't have too much say in the matter.
but they must have weighed in with their opinion or no, nothing?
To some extent. I'm from a pretty small family. I have just one brother and sister, and they didn't weigh in too much. My wife is a family of 12.
Wow.
So there's definitely a lot of siblings there.
Meaning 10 children or 12 children?
No, 12 kids. She's,
wow, that's a big family.
She's one of 12, exactly. Kanainahara. And so there was definitely, you know, conversations and that, but everyone, my wife's siblings are all very cool people. They're all very nice. There was no one was like, you're crazy. In a certain sense, with me, no one was surprised. People, the kind of personality I have is a little, you know, kind of onto the next thing, you know? So right. I don't think it came as a major surprise to most people that know my wife and I. And Baruch Hashem, most people were pretty supportive of it. We didn't really have anyone that we had to justify ourselves to.
And so now you had to actually follow through on this. Now, when you first decided to come here, was it let's just live in the land or was it let's make Aliyah? I understand the whole thing philosophically is living in the land. I get that. It's like that for me too, by the way. My question is, Was it we got to call nefesh b'nefesh, or like let's rent the place in Givat Shaul?
No, it's called nefesh b'nefesh. It wasn't the idea that I needed to officially make aliyah or anything like that. For me, it was just I wanted to come here, and I wanted to come here permanently. My wife sat down with me. She said, if we're going to move to Israel, I have a couple of demands. She laid out a couple of things. I need A, B, and C if we're going to do it.
What were the demands?
It was mostly just being able to live somewhat comfortably. Yeah. I have to be able to. I can't force her to live in some broken down place and not be, you know, like I have to promise that I'm going to make sure that my family gets what, you know, partially. I mean, look, this apartment is about maybe a fifth of the size of our house in Tom's River.
But it's very nice.
But for Israel standards, I think it's pretty nice. And
very nice.
Baruch Hashem, yeah. And so most of her demands were along those lines, reasonable things.
I don't need everything, but I need to feel like
mechubad. And it's very reasonable, absolutely. And I think every wife has the right to ask that of their husband if their husband is the one that wants to make the aliyah. And I told her in turn, I said, although I'm the one that wants to move to Israel, I said, I will do anything and everything I can to make sure that you're as comfortable as can be. I said, but I have also one condition. In order to actually move, I said, we can't go back. Because if the option of, if it doesn't work out, we'll move back. That's why so many people, well, I shouldn't say so many people, that's why I would say the majority of people that make a Yerida, make the Yerida. Because there's this option of, if it doesn't work out, we go back. And the fact is, it's hard. It's hard here, especially in the beginning. And if that's your thought process, there's a very good chance you're just going to say, okay, this is enough. Enough is enough.
So your condition was, we have to cut the rope bridge.
Yeah. I said, I will do anything I can to make sure you're as comfortable as can be here. But my condition to you is you cannot ask me to move back. Unless something like...
Sure.
You know.
That's pretty intense.
Yeah.
Because that's not the kind of thing where she's just like, okay. Like she had to think that through.
A bit, yeah.
You guys, of all the people I've spoken with, I think you guys handled this more thoughtfully rather than either being part of like the marketing wave, oh, it'd be so cool to live there, or, wow, my kids are going to be fluent in Hebrew. They can learn any sefer they want. You know, things like that, okay, but you were not at that level. You were like, we are ending the exile for this family.
Yeah. Very, so to speak. It was just
so one. So what does that mean?
One goal.
Right?
It was, we need to live in Eretz Yisrael. We're Jews, we need to live in Eretz Yisrael, and whatever it takes, we're going to do that. It had nothing to do with learning the language. I still don't talk a word of Hebrew, to be honest. It doesn't. Learning languages is not my thing. Okay. And for anyone who's listening, who's thinking, how am I going to do it without learning Hebrew? Baruch Hashem, we have Beit Shemesh, and I don't speak a word of Hebrew, and I'm doing just fine here. Baruch Hashem. It's inconvenient a lot of times.
Yeah, banks, supermarkets.
Yeah, it's inconvenient. We have neighbors, you have friends. I have to sometimes get together with my neighbors to make some phone calls. But my wife is definitely picking up the language faster than I am, and she's able to make some of the phone calls now. Baruch Hashem. But, you know, if language is your concern, Baruch Hashem, we have Beit Shemesh. And most of the people here can understand English.
So you guys came to an agreement. Okay, we're doing it.
Yeah.
So what next? How did you decide when you were going to come? How did you decide where you were going to land? What did you do?
Right. So my wife, she told me, we understood there's a lot of paperwork to make aliyah. And she told me, I have to take care of everything. She'll move, but I gotta figure everything out, which I was more than happy to do.
Yep.
I remember I had a little. We renovated our basement in our house. Again, typical of an American mentality. We bought a house. We're living there for 1 year, and every day, all we could do is, how can we make it better? How can we make it bigger? We were getting sucked into that same thing, which is what I wanted to break out of. So we renovated our basement, even though we didn't need to. We had two kids, the third on the way, and. And we built a little extra bedroom downstairs, and it was a guest bedroom, wasn't really being used. So I remember I basically just took that bedroom and I just laid out the paperwork.
Like the Aliyah war room.
That's exactly what it was. This is no one's walking into this bedroom. This is just my Aliyah room, and I had the papers and I just got started on the paperwork right away. And like I said, I mean, this was smack in the middle of COVID. So there were definitely some serious inconveniences. Offices were closed, both here in America and here in Israel. Definitely Nefesh B'Nefesh was partially understaffed, partially overworked, because there were actually a lot of people trying to inquire about moving to Eretz Yisrael from the whole COVID situation. So there were definitely inconveniences there, but my goal was to get to Eretz Yisrael as fast as possible, and the process took exactly 6 months. It was as quickly as we can do it, and as soon as we started the process, put my house for sale, put my business, my van, my furniture, and my goal was to get rid of everything. I wanted to cut every single tie I had with America. I sold a lot of things for not much money. A lot of furniture I just gave away, which I built most of my own furniture because I'm also a carpenter.
Cool.
And so it was a little hard. That was actually a hard thing because I just recently built half the furniture in my house for this house. Right. And I literally just gave it away for pennies on the dollar or less than that. And that was the goal. So it was just every day. It was I don't know, sometimes an hour, sometimes two, sometimes three, just every day. I finished work. I went downstairs and phone calls and, websites, just paperwork, figuring out where we're going to live, where the kids going to school, all these things. And by the time we finished the Aliyah process as fast as we could and all passports and paperwork and everything was in order, by that time, Baruch Hashem, we had already sold the house, found someone to buy my car and my business, and that's it.
And child number three was born by then, or no?
Child number three, yeah, he was. he was born. He was born a month or two before we made the Aliyah.
Right. So why did you landed in this apartment? This is where moved to. So where did you land?
Aleph, Rabbi Jemish Aleph.
Okay. So that is quite English speaking friendly.
Yeah.
You go into a store
even more
and they say, may I help you, please?
Exactly.
They don't even try.
Super convenient.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a really smart move. That's a good place to land if your Hebrew's not there.
Right. We chose Beit Shemesh for that. I ended up switching jobs many times, but the original plan was that I would continue doing plumbing, which is what I was doing in the States. So I came with, in fact, my phone number is plumber, if you spell out the numbers.
Okay.
So I was like, I had magnets. I had a van. I already bought a van before I even got here. I was prepared. And I knew I wanted Beit Shemesh because I knew I wanted to be able to have customers who speak English. I wanted to hit the ground running. And we sold our house, and I knew I wanted to take that money and buy an apartment as soon as possible before we spent it. But I didn't want to buy an apartment until I got here because I wanted to just scope out the neighborhoods and see the place. You don't want to buy an apartment without seeing it or seeing the neighborhood.
Yeah, for sure.
So landing in Aleph was, we knew it was temporary. We told the people when we moved in, we said we're not going to be living here for more than a year. So we got to Aleph, and as soon as we landed, our job was just find a place that we could buy an apartment, and then that's the final step. And that's what we did. As soon as we got here, we found this apartment, and then it was just obviously a few months till, we close on it and we moved in. So we have been here the majority of the time, minus the first 5-6 months, whatever it was, till we were able to close on the apartment.
And how's it been? Talk about life in Israel. Like you said, you've actually, employment wise, jumped around a little bit.
Absolutely.
The 1-800 plumber concept didn't work out as you had expected, or it worked out but you just decided to move on. How's it been?
It didn't. It's funny because it didn't work out as expected. It didn't work out as I expected it not to work out.
Oh, okay.
So I would say 75% of my mind was, I'm going to be doing plumbing. This is what I'm going to do for a living. It should be fine. I was in touch with some plumbers. That's how I know Bensi.
Right.
As we were talking. But there was a big chunk of my mind that also knew that I'm going to a place for spiritual reasons. And although plumbing is awesome and I got nothing against it, I was also completely open to the idea that Hashem might direct me somewhere else. So even though I got here, I put out an ad for plumbing. I was completely open with that it might not work out, and I'm just gonna follow the signs. And that's kind of what happened. And I've just been following the signs, which could be somewhat interesting. You know,
okay, reckless, so go ahead. So you were plumbing, and then what?
So like I said, I also do carpentry. I did it as a hobby in America. So I put an ad for plumbing in the local magazines in Beit Shemesh. After a few weeks, it just wasn't picking up very quickly. I wasn't getting enough calls, so I just switched the ad to carpentry. Same ad, just switched the word to carpentry. And that started picking up pretty quickly. So I was doing carpentry for the first year or so that I was here. I didn't have a shop, so it was a little interesting. I brought with me all my battery-powered Milwaukee tools, so I was working with one or two suppliers who I was having them cut the wood for me, and then, you know, I would go to the job, see what I need to build, take measurements, I would order the wood, have it cut for me, and then I would go assemble it and do the final touch-ups, depending on the job sometimes. I would do the cutting, but, you know, it was an on-the-go carpentry. I can't get into all the reasons why it didn't necessarily work out. There's just a lot of reasons. None of them were significant reasons why it didn't work out, but I wasn't feeling like it was conducive to what I was trying to do. I just saw that the hours had to be long, and the suppliers making a lot of mistakes and costing me a lot of time. Wow. And I was realizing that if I want to live the life I want to live, which is have enough time to spend time with my family, also have enough time to learn Torah every day, and daven three times a day with a minyan, which are all things that I take very seriously, and also have some time for myself, whatever it is, spiritual endeavors. I was just saying that, like, you know, in order to make a living doing the physical work, I just didn't think that I would have enough time just based off how it was playing out. That was probably one of the main reasons. I did a carpentry job for a sofa, and he was showing me his room where he does his writing. And he asked me, "You want to learn Safras?" And it happens to be just a few days earlier, I was talking to Hashem, I was doing some mispaid this.
Right.
And I was asking Hashem, you know, I was like, "I don't think this carpentry thing is working out. Please guide me. Guide me in the right path. I want to do something holy." And when he asked me this, I was like, sure.
Like, here we are, right?
So I was building a closet in his house. I finished the closet and he started giving me lessons. So for the first year, I was a carpenter. Year number two, I was a cipher. I'm actually three quarters done a Sefer Torah, which I was writing, but I never finished it before I switched to my next job. I'm still writing. I still write every day for an hour or two, but it's a slower process now. So after doing Safras for about a year, I started realizing after about 6-7 months that it wasn't for me. Although I liked the work, it was holy work, and I enjoyed it. I was always a physical guy working plumbing, carpentry, and I saw I needed to more movement, more action to just sit and write. It wasn't doing it for me. So again, I turned to Hashem and asked Hashem, guide me. I'm not sure what to do next. At that point, I have a good friend of mine who's my chavrusa. He lives actually next door. He was my neighbor in Tom's River.
Oh, wow.
And after I made my aliyah, he's like, I'm going to make aliyah too. And it shows how when you do something, someone else follows. That's how it works with moving to Eretz Yisrael. Because at the end of the day, every neshama, every Jew wants to be here, but they just need a push. A lot, you know, some people need bigger pushes than others, but for some people, it's just you need to meet someone else that did, and you're like, you know, he could do it, I could do it. I used to actually talk to him a lot about moving to Eretz Yisrael, so he also had it in his head. But when I did it, he's like, I could do it too. So he came, and so we were sitting right here on my porch. And again, this is about year number 2 years into my aliyah. And again, I was doing Safras, so I was looking for maybe something else, and he sings. And we were talking about maybe making a song about Eretz Yisrael, beauty of Eretz Yisrael, the Jews have to come back. And so he wrote a song. And he's not a professional singer, but he sings very beautifully, has a nice voice. And he wrote a song. And then we were talking about making a music video to the song. So he made some calls.
Yeah.
And it was quite expensive, you know, to make a video. And I'm like, for that price, for the price people are charging, I said, before I got married many years ago, I mean, I'm not that old now, to minute, you know, before I got married, I used to dabble in videos. I had a YouTube channel, I used to make videos, I enjoyed it, and I always kind of wanted to do it, but after I got married, I kind of just put that off for plumbing because it just seemed more practical. But anyway, I was talking to him, and I said, you know, if people are charging, you know, $5,000, $6,000, $7,000, you know, starting to even talk about making a music video, I said, for $1,000, I could buy a camera and a lens, and I'm sure we could make something decent. So that's what we did. I bought a camera and a lens and a few pieces of gear. I think I spent, I don't know, maybe whatever, under $1,500.
Yeah.
And that's what we did. He made a song. he paid to get it professionally recorded, it's called Home. It's on my YouTube channel, and that was the first video I made in this new phase of my life.
Yeah.
And so we made that video, and after I made the video, I'm like, you know, I really enjoyed making that video. I already have the camera. I said, looking for a new job anyway. Hit the magazine again, put out an ad, videographer. And and that's how my next job started, and that's what I'm doing now. I create videos.
So you create any kind of videos or music videos?
Any kind of videos. Okay. I don't do like weddings, bar mitzvahs. That's kind of a different, you know, genre. Is that how you pronounce it, genre?
Yeah.
And so I don't do that, but anything else, interviews, music videos, advertisements, product ads, I kind of...
Wow.
Yeah, anything. I enjoy it all. And then once I started making videos, and also that first music video was promoting Eretz Yisrael, promoting Aliyah, I said, hey, why don't I just mix both of these things together? And that's how I started my Homebound channel, which is how this came about.
Yeah.
Where I just started, you know, I have half my business is, well, my business is creating videos. I do ads. I do a lot of video editing for people. And then my spiritual video work is promoting Eretz Yisrael, promoting Aliyah through, you know, my capabilities in videography and video editing. And I'm trying to spread the word that way.
Okay. So that's an incredible review of a pretty short time period, actually.
Yeah, it's been a wild period.
when you think about it. And my only conclusion I can draw is that your wife is an incredibly holy person.
Absolutely.
What's going on with her during this time? You know, it's Tuesday, so I'm a plumber. It's Thursday, I'm a carpenter. Like, how... Well, obviously she knows you well, and she knows who her husband is, and that's okay with her. But, like, there's also running the family that's taking place during this period.
Yeah.
How did it go? How were those first couple of years? Sorry to ask in such an open-ended way, but, like, not simple.
Yeah, well, when you ask the question, you're referring to all these business endeavors and how they coincide with...
Your oldest child is how old?
He's 9.
Okay, so you have a, let's say, 6, 7, 8-year-old. Now he's 9.
Yeah.
Like, so he's got to go to school every day, and what does my Abba do for a living? And Tati, Abba?
Daddy.
Daddy? Okay, Daddy. What does Daddy do for a living? And there's sort of like a rhythm that any family has. And for those first couple of years, it was like not so rhythmic. Like, a lot of lack of clarity. So I'm wondering how it went.
Yeah. Well, it's still hasn't question. Settled down just yet. I still write every day. I'm still a cipher. I still do carpentry. I have a bunch of carpentry jobs lined up this week. I still dabble in it because I enjoy all these things. So I'm really open to anything. Although the video thing is what I'm main focused on right now, but I still get calls for carpentry jobs and I turn most of them down, but if it's for a friend or something I like to do, I'll take it. It's funny, in my family, both for my wife and kids, this whole thing kind of became a giant joke. You know, like my wife always jokes about it, how, you know, people already start asking, you know, what is your husband doing this week? And so we kind of made humor out of it, but it's fun. It's fun. My wife is, she enjoys the ride. She thinks it's great too. And in between all these things, I've done other things too, because with the video thing, I also sometimes, I'll take a photo shoot once in a while and I'll mix all kinds of interesting things in there. But my kids enjoy it. They get a kick out of it too. You know, seeing that I'm always doing something different, especially my oldest son, my 9-year-old, he enjoys it. He loves watching me, what I do. It's fun. They're great about it. They're great about it. You know, it's not like I'm running around chasing, you know, business. I'm actually very family oriented. I'm home all the time. I make dinner a lot of times for the family, and
right.
I put my kids to sleep every night, and I spend plenty of time with the kids. I make breakfast for them in the morning. So Baruch Hashem has blessed me. I somehow find a little bit of time for everything. And it's still like every day is just like another surprise, even for me. Like I wouldn't be surprised if I switched jobs again tomorrow.
And it wouldn't bother you at all. I can see. It wouldn't bother you at all.
Yeah. Yeah, my wife tells me sometimes. She says people ask her like, how does your husband like do like, just on to the next, doesn't work out, on to the next. Yeah. You know, a lot of people get bogged down by this. But again, it really comes along with the same thing of why we came here to begin with. It was there's a spiritual journey, and for me, if your entire life is through a spiritual lens, these things don't really matter because it's just like, I trust Hashem is going to pay the bills, you know, and he has, because realistically throughout all these jobs, I haven't really found
like a solid make sense, right?
Yeah, yeah. there really is like every week I'm like, how in the world are we going to pay the bills this week? Because like, every time I switch jobs, it takes a few months till I start picking up any business. So like, I would say the majority of the time I've been somewhat struggling to find work and pick up my next thing and find what I'm doing. And I'm always asking myself, how am I going to, for the next month, how are we getting the money? And like anyone that lives in Eretz Yisrael, they'll tell you it's Hashem. He just saw every time it's a different place, a different way. It makes no sense, but I got him.
You know,
three and a half years in, it's still working out.
So this is actually a great transition to the topic of the world you came from and why it's why living here is not as relevant as you and I think it should be. By the way, the world I come from also, it's not as relevant as it should be. Sure, more people who we would refer to in this country as Dati Lumi acknowledge Aliyah as a reasonable option, but not many of them are coming. So it's we're all in the same Absolutely. Boat to a degree. But Nisim and Niflaot, in terms of the financial side of life here, we all see it all the time.
It's undeniable. It's unbelievable.
So before we get into that topic, talk about, okay, you've been here 3.5 years, whatever it is. Your spiritual existence here, what's it been like?
I can't answer that question with words. Because okay. you just can't. You can't answer that question with words. It's sort of like what I tell people. I'm going to go off a little bit, but it's kind of an explanation. When I was making my aliyah along with the first year or two, and I was here, I was doing a lot of preaching, like a lot of people do. You move here, you're on a high, telling everyone, you got to move to Eretz Yisrael, you got to come, it's so important and everything. And you just realize most people just laugh at you, or they will engage in conversation, but not really for conversation, they'll engage for argument. Because that's what people like to do. We like to argue and hash things, especially Jews, you know. You don't need to, you do need to, and that.
Right.
And then I would say at the point I am now, although I'm making videos promoting Aliyah, because I'm just giving the information, you can choose to watch it, you don't have to, whatever you'd like. But the thought process I'm currently in is that it's not something you can hash out with someone. It's not a halachic perspective. It's even beyond just the Torah. It's something you feel, and you can only experience it once you're here, once you're living here. And that's why I think it took, 3 years for me to get to this point. And the way I feel about Eretz Yisrael right now, it's like when if I'm talking to someone and they're like, why should I live in Eretz Yisrael? And I'd be like, can't answer that question. Like, you have no idea why. I could tell you need to, but I can't tell you in words why you need to live in Eretz Yisrael. It's such a holy, it's such a special thing. It's not just a mitzvah. It's a completely different playing field. There's Chutz La'aretz, there's being a Jew in Chutz La'aretz, and there's being a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. And when people say things like, I could be a Jew in Chutz La'aretz, I could serve Hashem just fine in America. You think you can, but you have no idea what it's like to be a Jew in Eretz Yisrael. It's a completely different field. So since I got here, my spirituality has been like a roller coaster in good ways.
Uh-huh.
Not going down, but definitely spinning and flying all over the place. Experience, some people come here, they experiment with Breslov and, I go through all kinds of interesting phases. I didn't really go through Breslov phase just yet. But my outlook on spirituality and the Torah, it's becoming, I don't know how to say, much more divine. I'm just mm-hmm. seeing things, again, the lens that I'm seeing the world in is becoming holier and much more of a spiritual lens. The more that I'm here in Eretz Yisrael, the more I'm connecting with Hashem, and especially with the struggles in Parnassa. A lot of people don't want to come here because it's hard to make a living here. But what they don't realize is hard to make a living here because that's what promotes spirituality. You know, they don't get that. It's that's exactly what it is. You cannot be given $1 million. Here's $1 million. Grow spiritually. No, I'm going to take all your money away from you, and they'll cry out to Hashem because he's your only hope to pay your bills. And that's what it is.
Like the whole story of the Nile River for the Egyptians, right? They had the Nile River, so they didn't have to cry out to Hashem.
Exactly.
Therefore, they didn't have a relationship with Hashem.
Exactly.
And the Jewish people, we have to cry out to Hashem. So you're saying that it almost doesn't fit with what life is supposed to be here.
Right. So yeah, people say, I would move to Israel, but you know, I tell people, you should move to Israel because this is the place you can become closer to Hashem. And they'll respond, yeah, but what about Parnassa? Like, that's exactly how you're going to become closer to Hashem. You're going to struggle in Parnassa.
Right.
That's the process. It's that the majority of the greatest tzaddikim have always been poor, whether it was voluntarily or against their will, but that's the way to become closer to Hashem. The ultimate test or training program that the Jews have went through before Eretz Yisrael was the Mon. Hashem put us in a place where it was virtually impossible to survive. Absolutely impossible. Hashem could have put us in some other place where it would be hard to survive, but Hashem put us in a place, you know, millions of Jews in the middle of a desert, no water, no food, nothing. And Hashem said, I will take care of you every day through pure miracles. That is the greatest spiritual plane that you can be on, that world of complete reliance on Hashem. And so Eretz Yisrael is, you know, not as high as the Midbar and the Mun, you know, training program, but that's what Eretz Yisrael is. Hashem puts us in a place where you would ask anybody here, and based off of what I need to provide for my family and based off of what I see I can make, I would say, I mean, it seems to me as of right now, it's almost impossible for me to pay my bills, but Hashem keeps paying my bills. And, you know, people will say whatever they can to get out of that being the truth because people are nervous to face that test. And it is, it's nerve-wracking. For me, I'm working continuously on my Emunah and Betachon. And again, that's why Hashem does it, because then you need to work out. You either can pull your hair out and lose your mind, or you say, okay, let me turn to Hashem and just keep working on my connection to Him and my reliance on Him and my Emunah and Betachon. And that's exactly why Hashem makes it, you know. Some people will turn to Hashem because of health issues, and I don't want that. Like, you got to be honest. You know, we generally turn to Hashem when we have a struggle in our life. That's just a fact. It's just the way it is. We're humans, and that's just how things are. And on the, you know, the different choices, if I give you 10 choices of the different difficulties in your life that would make you cry out to Hashem and become closer to Him and have to rely on Him, I think everyone would comfortably choose money as probably the easiest one, as opposed to marital issues, as opposed to health issues, as opposed to
safety,
whatever it is.
Right.
Exactly. So if you just understand that, so my spiritual journey here, I think was your question before. this is all kind of the answer. It's unbelievable.
Right.
It's unbelievable. I can't describe it. There's no words to describe it.
I don't want any names. I don't want you to mention any names, but clearly through your life there have been rabbanim who have been part of your life.
Yeah.
Give me, this is like the question. You ready? Give me your thoughts on rabbanim and living in Israel, rabbanim in the States and living in Israel, and what you believe could be a potential recipe for turning the tide. And you can answer that however you want.
Yeah.
As incompletely or completely as you want.
I have a lot of answers. I could sit here and talk to you about the answer to that for many hours. I'll try to give the most straightforward answers. You want to know in regards to Rabbanim, or you want to know in regards to the general, how can we get more Jews interested in Eretz Yisrael?
I want both.
So I would say the general aspect is the same way I got here, which is we need to put more emphasis on Tanakh. People need to be taught about the values of Tanakh, about Eretz Yisrael from a young age. You go through, you know, in America, You go through elementary school, high school, base medrash, and not one single time will anybody ever mention the idea of, you know, maybe after school you should think about moving to Eretz Yisrael. Or, you know, the idea is only maybe you should learn in Eretz Yisrael. But obviously that just means come right back and then get married here and continue on with your life. These are like the things that people say. Yeah. As if like, just, you know, don't think about moving to Eretz Yisrael. That's crazy. Like as if that has nothing to do with Judaism. So I think it needs to start. I think I've thought about this a lot, obviously, and it needs to start from the ground up. You need to completely change. I shouldn't say completely, but upgrade the educational system from people in more of the modern crowds, the young Israel crowds. There's much more emphasis on Israel, but maybe more from like a, I don't know, for lack of better words, like a Zionistic perspective.
Right.
I don't like to use that word because that's a scary word, but, you know, just more of like, it's our land. But if you're teaching kids about, you're raising, you know, the next generation, you're teaching them about how to serve Hashem, how to follow the Torah, how to be the best Jews we can be, how do you skip out Eretz Yisrael? And the fact that, you know, I mean, you got to go back as to how it began, which is going to be, it was never an option. For so many years.
Hundreds of years of Galut, right?
Thousands, yeah. I mean, realistically, yep. I mean, we're talking about close to 2,000 years that it's never been an option, but it's something we've prayed for. And when you just look at the facts, I mean, really, to sum it up in the simplest way we can, is when Hashem opened the gates of Eretz Yisrael for Jews to come back, right? 1930s, 1940s, whatever it was that, you know, it started happening. The waves of Aliyah, well, actually...
Late
1800s, I would say, is the first waves of Aliyah, right. But it was still hard. I'm talking about when it, like, really started becoming, like, a thing that a practical person could do with his family.
Yeah.
Late 1800s was the pioneers. It was still quite hard. So when the gates of Eretz Yisrael were opened, it was about the time of the Holocaust, which is when, like, that was, like, the major turning point of all of Jewish history. And at the same time, Hashem opened up the gates of the United States of America. And because whenever there is great spirituality somewhere, Hashem will always make an even amount of the opposite to create a test.
And is that your perspective, or is that based on some Chazal? I've never heard that before.
This is like, I can't quote anybody. This is like a famous right. Jewish concept. Like even in Eretz Yisrael, like people always say, like wherever there is extreme holiness, there's also extreme tumah, right? You're not familiar with this concept?
I mean, I know the Gemara that said that Yerushalayim and Caesarea could not exist at the same time, which is actually the opposite of what you're saying. You know what I mean?
Yeah, we'll have to look up the source.
I understand conceptually that why that would be.
Right.
That the concept of a test.
There's always a test. There's always a test. And I'm sure if I had a few minutes, I could find some sources. The concept, I think most people are familiar with the concept. So it's not a coincidence that, you know, the borders of America, a land of freedom and opportunity, was opened up to the Jews, which is also a very unique thing because the Jews have always, I mean, although, you know, Jews have went through their periods of semi-ease in Europe, there was certain times that it was easier, but for the most part, the Jews have always been experiencing pogroms and anti-Semitism on high levels. And America was something new. It was really like the first time that Jews were completely accepted into a place as equals to everyone else, and still kind of are. I mean, minus what's happening right now, I guess.
Right. But
most people can agree, like, relative peace and freedom and equality there for Jews.
Sure.
And it's not a coincidence that Hashem opened that up to the Jews for the first time, along with Eretz Yisrael for the first time, which gave every single Jew the choice. Am I going to take the freedom there, or am I going to take some more hardships, but in the place that I've been praying for my whole life? And we failed the test miserably, obviously. And the vast majority of Jews ended up in different places in Europe, but mostly in America. This whole process was how this whole thing came about, this whole idea of where to live. Because up until this point where America came into existence, everyone was always praying to come back to Israel. It would never have been an option to choose any other place over Eretz Yisrael. We've been thrown out of every single country. We've been experiencing just violent hatred always. And we've always been yearning and praying for Eretz Yisrael. And as soon as we had the opportunity to come back to Israel, Hashem challenged us by also opening up America. And so many people chose America. And there'll be a lot of people that'll say things like, or Moshe Feinstein lived in America, or Victor Miller lived in America. So, well, there's two parts to that. First of all, you have to understand that, same like in the Gemara, there were a lot of Tanoim and Amoraim who lived in Bavel,
right.
And there were a lot of them who lived in Eretz Yisrael, and you can see the ones in Eretz Yisrael were always cursing out the ones that lived in Bavel, and because of you we don't have Mashiach, because of you we're still in exile.
Yeah, yeah.
So on one hand, there's, for the greatest Gedolim, there is a certain allowance for them to live outside of Eretz Yisrael, because being that there are millions of Jews in America or in other places in Europe, they need spiritual guidance. So there needs to be some rabbanim who are going to make that sacrifice. That's A. B is, you also, it's important to always understand the stories of these rabbis. Moshe Feinstein, for example, he escaped Russia. They wanted to kill him because he was teaching Torah and he was becoming a very prominent rabbi. And they basically put a hit out on his head for the most part, and the government were out to kill him.
Yeah.
And he had to run away. And the first tickets he got were from wealthy Jews in America who got him a way to get there. So he chose America. Once he's in America, they didn't let him leave. We need you here. But at the end of the day, the vast majority of Gedolim over the last 50 years have absolutely lived in Eretz Yisrael.
No question.
No question about it. And if you want to use your Moshe Feinstein or Victor Miller, who was also born and raised in America and stayed there because he was needed, if you want to use them as an example, well, let's see you do everything else like them. That's, you know, right. What I'm saying? You can't use he's the leader, and so I'm going to be like him. Well, he's there because he's the leader, and he's needed there.
So what's the recipe?
So like I said, I mean, we need to change it from the ground up.
Yeah, education.
The education system. People need to learn about Tanakh. We need to get it. Tanakh was kind of taken out of the system for the same reason Eretz Yisrael was sort of taken out, because in the beginning, the first Jews that moved to Eretz Yisrael were secular Jews who were anti-God, anti-Torah. And there was a lot of fight against them. So a lot of Rabbanim at that point were saying, don't move to Eretz Yisrael because they're gonna convince you to go off the derech or whatever
and
it was.
They did,
rightfully so. For that period of time, they were absolutely correct.
That's right.
It was correct that Jews should not move to Eretz Yisrael for that period of time because it was dangerous. That's long in the past, Baruch Hashem.
Yeah.
And for the similar reason, Tanakh was also taken out, because the Reformed and the secular Jews, they put a lot of emphasis on Tanakh, the Bible. And also after the Holocaust, there was an extreme emphasis on halacha, halacha, halacha. We need to get Klal Yisrael, you know, we need to get Klal Yisrael back on their feet. We can't lose the Torah. So Tanakh was, for a lot of these reasons, Tanakh was just put on the side.
Right.
But again, there may have been some valid reasons to put a lot less emphasis on Torah Shebik Sav and much more emphasis on Torah Shebik Peh, for the reasons of rebuilding Klal Yisrael and for the reasons that it was a more secular thing to learn for a period of time. But there's consequences. You take Torah Shebik Sav out of Judaism and you're left with, why should I move to Eretz Yisrael? You know, that's right. What you're left with.
That's right.
You're asking that question because you learn Gemara for 10 hours a day and you learn zero Tanakh. If you learn a little Tanakh, you might realize that a lot of Klal Yisrael, a lot of Judaism, a lot of the Torah, it's based or in and around and about Eretz Yisrael. Is where you perform the mitzvahs. I mean, many times in the Gemara, it says the only place you can perform, the Rambam says, right, everyone brings it down. The only place that you can properly fulfill, not just properly, the only place you can actually fulfill the mitzvahs according to many Rishonim is in Eretz Yisrael. Everywhere else, as Rashi says, it's just practice, technically.
Right. Right.
Now, we're not going to say don't do the mitzvahs, but when they say something that intense, you got to understand, like, there might be some serious meaning behind that.
For sure.
So fixing it from the ground up is one thing. And also, another thing, you mentioned the Rabbanim. Hashem, I never like to Rabbanim are wrong for not telling Klal Yisrael to move there, because at the end of the day, they're giving the Jews what they need. We've been in Gaulis for a very long time.
Right.
That's what I mean by weak. And we've lost a lot of that spiritual oomph. And so to tell Jews right now, get up and move to Eretz Yisrael. If a rabbi is going to say that, people are either just not going to listen to him, or they're going to do it and they're not prepared to do it, and they won't be able to handle it. The challenges that it comes with.
Well, let's go back to Tanakh, right? How long did the Bnei Yisrael need to get from Mitzrayim to Israel? Ultimately, they needed 40 years.
Of preparation.
Yeah. Of preparation. They couldn't just go straight in. I mean, they proved through the Chet HaMeraglim and other complaints, they proved that they weren't ready. And so I think we need to take a similar approach. Like, it's a process. And, you know, I once heard a Rav who lives in Israel give a talk in the States. And he said to the crowd, it was maybe a crowd of 100 people, talking about Aliyah. And as he's closing in on the end of his talk, he said, "But I don't want you guys to worry, because I don't want you. I want your children."
Nice.
And that's the idea. The idea is that as the years go by, the concept of living in this land is, as much as people want to ignore it, is more and more reasonable. And
so reasonable.
And you know, I was talking to a friend a couple of years ago. He's been in Israel even longer than I've been in Israel. And I said, so he's maybe 23 years in Israel. So looking back, how's it been? He's like, much easier than I thought it was going to be. So, you know, that's where we are in history. And God has given us the ability now to come here fairly simply and continue our lives here. And so I wish you much hatzlacha as we continue with your Aliyah story that continues to unfold. This is not the end of the interview, but it is the end of this first part, and I just want to encourage you to keep pushing out that message, because one thing Tanakh tells us is that when we're unified, we are unbeatable.
Absolutely, yeah.
and that's not just unified philosophically. It's unified physically. We have to we have to be together, and then we can. You just like you name it, we can make it happen.
Absolutely.
Okay, I've got what we refer to as the rapid fire questions. I ask the same questions to everyone.
Oh yeah.
Most people have been in Israel longer than you have, but this is such a timely topic that I broke the rules to speak with you. Like every other person I've spoken with has been in Israel for at least 10 years, but I was like, no, I'm speaking with him anyway. It's my podcast. I can do whatever I want, right?
Absolutely.
In the Weichbrod house, Kedem or Israeli grape juice?
Israeli.
Heinz or Israeli ketchup?
Israeli.
Wow.
Which actually was a hard switch, but I've been eating so much Israeli ketchup that I was by someone's house this Shabbos, and he served Heinz, and I didn't like it. my taste must have changed for Israel Baruch Hashem.
What's the Israeli food you love the most?
That I love the most?
Yeah.
Specifically Israeli? If it's shawarma, I guess.
Okay.
Yeah.
And is there an Israeli food that like people love and you're like, I don't see what they see in this thing. It's disgusting to me.
Halva? Is that what it's called?
Yeah.
I
really?
I'm not a picky guy. I love almost every food. I cannot understand. Halva tastes like chalk. It really is. Feels like chalk, tastes like chalk.
I love it.
Yeah. That's I can't eat that.
So you talked about your Hebrew language skills. So normally I'll ask the question, how's your Israeli Hebrew accent? But since you're not spending too much time speaking Hebrew, maybe you can talk a little bit more about, like, do you have any plans or hopes of trying to learn the language? Or
absolutely.
Like, what's your perspective
on that? Absolutely,
yeah.
Absolutely. Like I said, when I got here, I kind of hit the ground running with work and this and that. I just never had the time to take Alpan. But as I'm living here longer, I'm seeing it's quite important. So I think I'm in the near future with Hashem's help going to see if I can find some time every week to take some Alpan courses or something. Yeah, I think.
How are your kids, by the way, in terms of Hebrew? Like, do you hear them speaking Hebrew?
Not so much. Because okay. My oldest son is semi-homeschooled. So he understands Hebrew, doesn't speak it so much yet. And then my seven-year-old, he understands it and speaks it, but there's no one in the house to talk to in Hebrew, and English is still his first language. He hasn't changed yet, so
yeah.
It's all English here.
What brings you to tears of joy or pride in Israel?
Almost everything. I've never cried in my entire life up until I got there to Israel. I mean, that's an exaggeration, obviously, but practically, I'm not a crier. I'm not an emotional person. I would say here, living in Eretz Yisrael, I just sitting on my porch, just looking at Beit Shemesh, not even Yerushalayim, just Beit Shemesh. I just see right here. I have a nice view. I see all the houses here in Aleph, and I just tear up every time. It's like, it's unbelievable. Klal Yisrael coming back. So really, everything about this land makes me cry.
What do you miss most about where you came from? Putting family aside, that doesn't count. What do you miss most?
A couple of things. I mean, customer service, and if a more personal level, I would say probably my workshop. I had a two-car garage. I turned it into a woodworking workshop. That was very, very special to me. Wow. To have a place I could just go because I like to build things. So I missed that a lot.
You sold your house. Did you sell to someone who would appreciate that, or not necessarily?
No. My workshop was gone immediately.
Two more questions. Is Aliyah for everyone?
Every Jew, you mean? Absolutely, 100%. Now, when I say that, I don't mean today. I mean every single Jew needs to make it a plan for the near future. Some people in the near future might be a year. Some people might be 10 years. Some people might even be 15. I wouldn't say past that.
Yeah.
But absolutely for every person. It's just a matter of when. To say Aliyah is not for me is dead wrong, because these are not my words. It's the Torah. It's the Rishonim, the Achronim, it's all Chazal. It's everyone great who's ever lived. Right. No great person ever has said Eretz Yisrael is not for any Jew. It's a mitzvah in the Torah. God himself said it, so the answer to that is very easy.
Last question. I see you have a couple of things on your refrigerator, but a lot of people have magnets on their refrigerators with like clever sayings or, you know, food for thought and that kind of stuff. Is there a sort of like phrase or mantra that keeps you going in terms of living in the land?
Well, like I said before, you know, what would David HaMelech do? That's a pretty big one. Yeah. But if you want it specifically related to Eretz Yisrael, I would say it would be something along the lines of, it's not about you. I think something like that.
Wow.
You know,
talk about that a little bit. What do you mean by that?
I think there's two aspects to that, which is why I say it's in regard to Eretz Yisrael. Because first of all, as a person who still hasn't fully gotten used to the culture, a lot of times I'll go to the store, I'll get cut off in line, or some Israeli will yell at me for no reason on the road. And, you know, as a soft American, I take it very personally. I'm all offended. So that phrase would be, it wasn't about you. Nothing. This is just the culture. Right. Right. But more importantly than that is what, when I say those words, it's not about you, I would say it's more about living in Eretz Yisrael in general and the things we're doing here. It's not about you personally. This is about a much bigger picture. This is about the future of Klal Yisrael. This is about Klal Yisrael as a whole. This is about our children and the next generation. So whatever difficulties you endure over here, you could say, wow, that was so hard, it's so difficult, I'm going through such hard times, but it's important to know it's not about you. This is about a much bigger picture. And when you understand that you living here and putting up what you're putting up with in this holy land is about something much greater. It's about Klal Yisrael as a whole. And when you understand that, it gives you much more, I think, strength to get through the challenges.
Michael Weichbrod, thank you so much for returning again to your story, which is only starting.
Oh yeah, just the beginning.
And I just wish you much success in the future. I'll make sure that we put a link to Homebound and to the...
Homebound,
to
Eretz Yisrael.
And to the video, the music video also.
It's on the channel.
Oh, it's on the channel. Okay. So that the listeners can see what this is all about. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.